The International Whaling Commission is meeting this month in Morocco. On the agenda is a proposal to end the moratorium on commercial whaling, which was set in place in 1986. A surprising number of member stations of the IWC have supported the idea, and joining us now is Philip Hoare, author of The Whale in Search of the Giants of the Deep. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our underreported segment. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay. Hasn't the moratorium on whaling enjoyed popular support all over the world? Why is the International Whaling Commission considering ending it?
Well, it's principally because of the what some people regard as the renegade actions of the Japanese in maintaining a whaling fleet under the auspices of what they claim to be scientific research. The problem with this is that they are now operating, they certainly have been operating within what is a declared whale sanctuary in the Southern Ocean. So unlike the other two nations who do operate as whaling nations, Norway and Iceland, which pretty much hunt whales in their coastal waters, Japan are coming into other waters and so are operating and taking whales sort of without restriction. So it's the problem really boils down to the fact that we're in a situation where Japan is acting beyond the controls of the IWC in a way, or they would argue that they are. In fact, they're not. And the latest proposal, which is being argued out even as we speak in Morocco in the annual meeting of the IWC there, it is to allow commercial whaling to resume for a 10-year period, which would mean that all the quotas that are imposed are strictly regulated by the IWC. That, in a nutshell, is the situation.
I'm not sure I understand. You lift a moratorium to limit hunting whales. It seems to me to be
a difficult situation, and it doesn't make much sense any way which way you look at it, because partly from the fact that if you look at the reason why Japan are whaling, scientific research is obviously a complete canard. That's a cover for what is obviously a commercial operation and has been admitted as such now by Japan, really. And yet you have a market which is almost non-existent for whale meat. I mean, the whale meat which is being taken from the animals which are being taken in the Southern Ocean is being stored, and some of it goes to pet food. So it's the whole thing is, I think at bottom, what we're talking about is an organization which is being entrusted with conservation aspects, or how you regard, an organization like that to behave, is in fact founded to propagate and maintain whaling stocks for whaling. It's an entirely, the 1986 moratorium is an entirely temporary and voluntary ban on whaling. So it's never really gone away. That's the problem. It's never gone away.
Well, what's supposed to happen at the end of these 10 years?
Well, who knows? I mean, we hope. I mean, it's a long game. I mean, everyone is playing a very long game here. Japan is playing a long game because they think they are going to win. And it's not impossible they will, actually, because they've got quite a lot of members of the IWC, which comprise 88 different nations. Some of these nations who are voting for Japan have never had any interest in whaling. Some of them don't even have coastal borders. We're talking about some of landlocked states, some of these. On the other hand, we know that the Japanese whaling fleet is moribund, really. It's very expensive. It's costing them $1 million to keep afloat. The actions of Sea Shepherd, Paul Watson Sea Shepherd, very familiar to your listeners from the Whale Wars TV series, is actually doing quite good work in preventing the Japanese whaling fleet from catching their self-imposed quota. So the whole thing is, I mean, it's founded on sort of ashes, really. I mean, it's a nonsensical situation, at baseline.
Now, what countries are supporting the proposal? You said some countries that are even landlocked. We're talking about 88 members of the IWC. But what about the United States and Great Britain? Are they supporting
it? It's this is where it becomes quite complicated because, of course, the United States has an Aboriginal or an Indigenous exception for the hunting of specifically bowhead whales by Inuit. Now, up to 50 bowhead whales are taken by Inuit every year. Now, Japan can then turn around and say to the U.S., well, you are now allowing your own people to take whales who are judging. I mean, bowhead whales are incredibly long-lived animals. These are animals which live probably up to 350 years. I mean, they're probably the oldest living animals.
And I understand that that some whales have been caught, found recently, that have harpoons in them that go back 100, 200 years.
Up to longer than that, you know.
350 years they live? That's incredible.
Yeah, no, it's beyond belief. So so it is extraordinary. And so this is one thing that the Japanese can turn around on the U.S., really. And a recent meeting of the IWC, that they use that tool very effectively against the U.S. and the British anti-whaling positions, which are trenchant and well observed. When you talk about the U.K. opposition to whaling, it's even more complicated. And it must vote as a bloc with the other European community countries. Now, one of those is Denmark, and Denmark supports the not only the whaling cull, which is annually takes place in the Faroe Islands, which is pretty horrific. It's the slaughter of hundreds of pilot whales a year, but also the current proposition by Greenland to start taking, as an Aboriginal hunt, start taking humpback whales, which is very contentious, you know. We're dealing here with animals which have only just recovered their stocks. You know, they came to be within a hair's breadth of extinction, many of these species, you know, the blue whale, the fin whale, the humpback whale, the North Atlantic right whale, which, of course, you know, in waters not too far from New York, you know, there are only 350 of these animals extant. So, you know, this is one reason why we're so worried about the notion of a 10-year open season on whales.
Well, whale oil helped fuel the Industrial Revolution, was even used to make products like nitroglycerin in the early 20th century. But is there any practical commercial value for whale oil or whale meat in the 21st century?
None. I mean, it's a sort of vanity cuisine in a way, you know. I mean, to eat whale burgers or made whale sushi. There's one industrial use of spermaceti oil, which is the oil from the sperm whale, is actually used in space technology. The NASA use it, in fact. They use it for, because it doesn't freeze in sub-zero temperatures, it's actually used as a lubricant in the space telescope, the Hubble Space Telescope, and in the Voyager space probe. But that's taken from stranded whales, you know, beached sperm whales. They're not hunted animals.
So NASA is buying whale oil for space telescopes?
Well, yeah. I mean, it does sound crazy, doesn't it? But it's true. And no synthetic substitute has ever been found to match the qualities of sperm oil. It cannot be reproduced. So yes, it is still being used by NASA.
Now, whales are mammals. Is this similar to big game hunting in some people's eyes? Are hunters still allowed to kill elephants and lions without any regulation?
Well, you know, I mean, the whole thing about the hunting of these whales, if you accept eating meat, I don't because I'm a vegetarian, but if you accept eating meat, you might say, as the Japanese say, that what difference is there from hunting and killing a whale than eating a dog, dog in Korea, a cow or a pig, you know, domestic animals? Well, the rationalization, really, the ethical issue is that you cannot kill a whale humanely at sea. It's impossible almost to kill a whale humanely at sea.
And they're not being farmed. The domesticated animals are in a different situation than the whales.
Sure, Exactly. And this is, you know, this is one thing that actually where the arguments of the Japanese and the Norwegians and the Icelanders and the Greenlanders as well, whoever, fall down is that on a sheer ethical issue, we would never allow large animals to be killed, you know, on land, which would take 4.5 hours to dive, which just would not countenance it. And that's really, from my point of view, that's the ethical, moral issue here, is that how can you... And you're talking about animals which are incredibly intelligent. I've actually swum with sperm whales in the waters of the Azores. I've been echolocated by sperm whales. I've been as close to a whale as a person can get, and you know, I've detected, I make no bones about the sentimentality of this, but I've detected sentience, intelligence in the eyes of those whales.
Let me ask you about eating them again. Even if we could argue that it's okay to eat them, so many fish, the large fish, have high levels of mercury in them. They take in other pollutants as well. I would assume that whales are filled with all sorts of things that are not good to eat.
You know, that's such a good point. That's exactly true. I was recently in Portland, Maine, visiting the laboratory of Dr. John Weiser, who's doing some incredible research into the heavy metals which accrue in, especially in sperm whales.
They get chromium, don't they?
Chromium, this is the most extraordinary thing to my mind, is that sperm whales, because they breathe very deep, these are very deep diving animals, they stay down for an hour, they can dive for a mile in depth, because they breathe so deeply when they're charging their bodies with oxygen at the surface, they're actually taking in heavy metals from the air, from chemical plants, chromium in the air. So they're actually, and it's causing chromosomal damage in these animals, analogous, Dr. Wise says, analogous to Down syndrome in human beings. A lot of the pollutants that are pumped into the ocean and into the air by human beings end up in whales because they're at the top of the food chain. You know, it's where all this stuff ends up, is in the whale.
Despite the moratorium, the number of whales caught by the three countries we've been talking about has actually been on the increase. 1,700 were killed last year, up from 300 in 1990. That despite the fact that we had that moratorium.
Yeah. It is remarkable, and it's a growing problem. That's why it's come to this pass. And, you know, this notion to allow 10 years of open commercial whaling is a desperate measure. It's a desperate measure because, you know, the problem is not going away. And it's salutary to think that in the year 2010, you know, when we thought we'd said goodbye to the Save the Whale campaign, you know, we thought we'd won that battle back in the 70s almost, you know. I was very lucky. I was in New Zealand last month and I met Roger Payne, who's the American scientist, who's the first man to record the Song of the Humpback Whale. And it was that sound that really evangelized for the Save the Whale campaign of the 1960s and 70s. And, you know, we really thought that had done the business. But sadly, as you say, you know, the numbers are increasing.
And Japan,
you know, the graph is going back up.
Japan has used the exemption for so-called scientific whaling to get around the ban. They recently launched a whaling fleet with the quota of catching 100 sei whales, 50 bride whales, 10 sperm whales. What kind of research do they claim to be doing there?
Well, I mean, absolute rubbish, isn't it? I mean, they claim to be researching into whale fertility. They also see that one of the things that underlines the Japanese thing is the notion that these whales are actually eating the fish that are being, you know, the human beings are trying to catch, you know, which is complete nothing rubbish, you know, as anyone knows. And most of the whales they're dealing with anyway, they are baleen whales, which eat very small, you know, anything bigger than a sand eel, you know. So we're not talking about any, you know, there's absolutely no effect on human fishing, you know, on human fishing source resources.
What's happening in the Gulf? Aren't there pods of whales, sperm whales especially, in the Gulf?
Very much is. There's an active and very precious and endangered population of about 1,700 sperm whales in the Gulf, and they are crucially affected by that oil spill. It's terrible because obviously it's not only they might ingest it through breathing, but it's going to work up through the food chain through to them as well again. So it's things looking really bad for them, I think.
Just one more thing. Australia recently filed suit against Japan for its whaling operation, saying that it doesn't qualify under the scientific exemption. Has the lawsuit complicated efforts to lift this moratorium?
I'm afraid you once again put your finger on a very important point. The problem is that if that court case goes to international law, it's not impossible that Japan will win. And this is the trouble. And if they win, then that almost legitimizes whaling forever. And that's the doomsday scenario.
And then it wouldn't matter what kind of commission got together and came up with rules.
Exactly. It's a scary, scary prospect. So Australia are playing it's a high-risk gamble that Australia are doing there, you know.
I've been talking with Philip Hoare, H-O-A-R-E, about lifting the whaling moratorium on today's Underreported. He's the author of a book called The Whale, which is published by Echo. And when is the IWC meeting? This month in Morocco?
I've just been talking to a chap who's there at the moment. They're meeting now. The final decision should come on the 24th, 25th of June, so we will know the final decision then.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.